And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom. And my co-host today is Dave Allen, and we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today, Tuesday, May 4th, 2021. I know we were in the process of trying to hook up to Dave. I'm not sure if he's there yet. Of course not. So we can go ahead and get started right away, and Todd will inform us when Dave's presence has arrived. Anyway, gold today. We've got gold, a little pressure on, of course, today after a nice day yesterday, down $14, $1,779. Silver was down 44 pennies at $26.56. Platinum was up two at $1,237. Palladium was up 11 at $3,046. The USDX today is trading higher. Well, that's the pressure on gold. Up 0.31 at 91.28. Crude oil was up another $1.22 at 65.71. How high is she going to go before it stops there for a while to take a breather? We'll find out, but until then, just get used to the higher pricing. S&P today was a little bit lower, and the NASDAQ sheds nearly 2%. Now, that was the worst day since March. But let's go to the Dow. The Dow was up 20 points at 34,135. The S&P was down 27 at 4,164. The NASDAQ was down 261, and it really, it was off the low. I did see 300 points earlier in the day, but currently 261, 13,633. The bond markets today, you have the 10-year yield, 1.58, and the European markets were all negative across the board. The FTSE was down 442 points. What's the FTSE MIB? Let's see what Asia did. Asia was a mixed bag, half up, half down. Shanghai and Nikkei were lower. And the Nikkei was down 241 points. So that's pretty much it in the day. I hear an echo. Does that mean Dave is here?
Dave has returned from Comcast Never Never Land. Hello, Melody. Yes, trapped in a some kind of, I don't know, wasp nest.
Comcast?
Indeed.
Or you.
Oh, hey. Well, I can't imagine it's me.
You wouldn't be here, right?
Are we on?
Yeah, we are. We are.
Oh,
I just gave
the
market report. And we were just getting ready to start talking a little bit about the Treasury borrowing. And we've seen the Treasury has more than quadrupled the borrowing estimate for the second quarter. And now expects to need $1.3 trillion over the second half of the fiscal year just to help for a raft of fresh pandemic relief spending. I thought the economy was going so good with GDP. Everybody should be back working. I don't know why we need another pandemic relief spending, but Treasury's projections incorporated the impact of Biden's $1.9 trillion pandemic relief bill that was enacted in March. And Treasury, in February outlook, the Treasury left out any guess on such spending. So we have both spending and revenues has been challenging, of course, naturally, when you look at the numbers that we have. Among the Treasury's projections are $463 billion in borrowing in April through June and $800 billion for the cash balance at the end of June to $800. That's only $300 billion more than previously seen, plus $821 billion in borrowing for the 3 months through September. A billion here, a billion there, equals a trillion here and a trillion there. Keep on trucking.
C. Everett Dirksen is, I don't know if he's smiling or crying in his grave. He once said a billion here, a billion there. Sooner or later, we're talking about real money.
Yeah, sooner or later. But Treasury would, before Monday's release, Wall Street had been speculating the Treasury would need to return the cash balance to where it's been when Congress suspended the federal debt limit. That's a joke. But anyway, there you have it, Dave. What say you?
There it is. Well, the Treasury says it assumed a cash balance of $450 billion at the end of the current debt limit suspension period on July 31st. Officials, Treasury officials, built an assumption of an increase or suspension of the ceiling into their outlook for $750 billion in cash for the end of September. That's the end of the fiscal year. After penciling in estimates during the pandemic last year for what might get approved by Congress, the Treasury by February essentially abandoned the effort given the challenges involved that you just referred to. Analysts from money management firm Jefferies said these projections are difficult to rely on. You think so? There's a significant amount of risk surrounding the size and pacing of tax receipts during the quarter and outlays related to the stimulus as well. Now, they added that these projections should be viewed in the context of the outlook for financing changes on a daily basis. That might be a tad too micro for most of us, Melody. I think if we follow the Treasury auction schedule, that should give us a decent enough idea of what lies ahead. Now, you know, the $1.3 trillion in borrowing needs in the second half of this fiscal year through the end of September, and that's mainly to cover larger than expected pandemic spending in the first half. So, I don't know. I'd like to say some magic is going on in our government agencies. Unfortunately, the magic I speak of is the kind that suggests that folks just can't keep up with all of these numbers. I mean, what's 13 zeros anyway between friends, right?
Exactly. You've got it. It's dazzle them with the footwork. And
a little bit of Fred Astaire and Sammy Davis Jr.
There you go. There you go. Well, you know, we talked about this, I think, just last week, Dave, where, you know, with the higher pricing coming into play, that you're going to have to see that the Fed will either raise rates or they'll rise on their own. Well, now leave it to Janet Yellen. She said
our market mover. Today's market mover. She's back.
Well, she said that interest rates may have to rise to keep a lid on the growth of the economy. You know, with all the trillions of dollars. So, I mean,
how dare she speak the truth?
Well, it's kind of, no, I look at it this way. No heck, Sherlock, you know, no shoot, Sherlock, you know. We said it a week ago or more. But anyway, of course, they're going to have to rise. And, you know, we can't have all those trillions of dollars and Fed stimulus going into the economy. And it's just bizarre. But she said, even though the additional spending is relatively small relative to the size of the economy, it could cause some very modest increase in interest rates. Well, you know, they're never going to come out and tell you the full extent of what they truly believe they will go. So when they say a modest increase, I mean, that's really admitting something. Their modest and my modest are two different things. And so if they come out and say that, I can only imagine how high those rates will go. She also said that these are investments in our economy, blah, 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 to be competitive and productive. But, of course, they have to tell the people that they think the economy will grow faster because of all these trillions of dollars and everything else that has to be done. I mean, they wouldn't get a leg passed if they said that, oh, we're going to just do this trillions of dollars just to keep the system going like we talk here on the program, and we're still going to have a struggle with our economy. Now they can't say that. But the Congress has allocated $5.3 trillion in spending, stimulus spending. We've seen resulting in a more than $3 trillion budget deficit in the fiscal year 2020 and a $1.7 trillion shortfall in the first half of this year alone, or the fiscal year of 2021. So, you know, I know they're looking for $4 trillion for this infrastructure, but they'll get at least half. You know, I don't think they'll get the full four, so they'll get at least half. And it's still a lot. $2 trillion is still a lot after what they've already spent, Dave. So,
well, it's $2 trillion plus on the Fed side of the equation. You've got all those treasuries and other government agency bonds that they're going still going strong month after month. Mm-hmm. Now, there is some talk of that being cut back sometime this summer. But, I mean, I think that falls under the seeing is believing category. Now, Yellen, I guess this is a backhanded kiss-up, attempting to maintain some semblance of, quote, independence, at least as far as perceptions of her go. I mean, she said that Biden's taking a very ambitious approach, making up for over a decade of inadequate investment in infrastructure, blah, 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 blah. Now, we know the Fed, which Yellen led from for 5 years, 2014-18, the Fed has kept the short-term interest rates anchored near zero for over a year now. That's despite an economy now growing at its fastest pace in four decades. Numerous Fed officials have vowed to keep its ultra accommodative policy in place until the economy makes, you know, those fancy words, substantial further progress towards full and inclusive employment, because that means no one's left behind. That will be a huge challenge. And inflation that averages around 2% over the longer term. Hey, haven't we been there, Melody? At least on inflation for a while now.
Yeah, like that's what they tell us.
Some of us in the industry are saying, you know, it's already between 6 and 10%. Use the government's older and more accurate methodologies. In any event, Fed officials said that after a brief rise this year, they expect these price pressures to ebb next. So Yellen, bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, she is largely unconcerned about inflation becoming a problem, though she added there are tools to address it should that happen. More mixed
signals,
Melody.
Isn't that what Jerome Powell said, too, almost word for word? There are
indeed
tools to address it.
Indeed.
Yes.
They're working from that famous script.
Yeah.
That only those lucky enough to be in that lofty position have access to.
Yep. Same word, same script, and the same BS. But and you know, again, what I don't get, Dave, is here the quote that there was a despite an economy growing at its fastest pace in nearly 40 years. Yeah, but I mean, when you're hitting rock bottom and you're, you know, because of the economy was literally in lockdown and shut down. And again, I brought this up last week. Where's that point to where it's like, okay, where is the real growth? This isn't growing. Yeah. This is rebounding from the low. I don't see it as additional growth.
My blog on this coming Friday addresses that very issue. Been doing a little bit of research after your discussion of that last week. Perhaps on Thursday's program, we'll share some of the, I don't call them findings, but we'll say, you know, perspective related to that research.
Yeah, looking forward to that, because that's the big question. And then how long does it actually take until we, if we would ever start growing again? So.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a similarity to it. I won't belabor it, as we'll talk about it Thursday, but I mean, just look at the jobs numbers.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the job numbers that are, and there have been a couple of healthy reports now coming with initial jobless claims going down and more people going back to work. Yet there's still more than 8 million less people employed than there were at the beginning of the pandemic. So as job growth goes, so does, I think, economic growth. As well, and we'll talk about those two more on Thursdays, ladies and gentlemen.
All right. Well, you know, we talk about that. Now the U.S. trade deficit is hitting a fresh record in March, as you know, consumers flush with government cash drove a continuing demand for those foreign-made goods. You know, now we have a new round of $1,400 stimulus checks, and. And again, as we just talked about, the economy is showing improvement. And the imbalance in goods and services with the rest of the world swelled to $74 billion. Now, this is the highest ever in a data series that goes back to 1992. And it represents a 58% increase from the same period a year ago. And higher than the $70 billion in February. Now, the trade imbalance with China also increased more than 22%. Then the deficit with Mexico rose 24%. PNC economist Bill Adams observed restrictions on high-contact industries have diverted consumer spending from domestically produced services to goods, much of which are imported. We did see exports. They actually did increase for the month, rising $200 billion or 6.6%. But then again, that was offset by a continued demand for the imported goods, which increased 6.3. So, you know.
Melody, I'm happy to report that after, I think, close to 25 years, my birthday this year, I'm getting a brand new set of Ping golf clubs.
Cool.
After years and years of usage, American-made, I should say, Ping golf clubs. And what, four back surgeries later, I'm ready to roll with, I will be, I should say, come next month.
All right, good deal. Hey, we're going to be heading, we're going to roll right into a break, so we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And heading into the break, we were talking about the deficit. I'm not so sure there's much more to... We can finish up on that if there's anything in there that was worth going into. So we're just going to
get the crux.
Yeah. So aren't you glad all those jobs came back to the U.S. of A? All those manufacturing jobs came back to the U.S. of A? Oh, my goodness gracious. But anyway, the House Financial Services Committee is going to hold its third hearing on Thursday. And, you know, why don't they just leave GameStop and you know, alone? On January 28th, remember everybody, GameStop hit that intraday peak of 483, breaking its run from a share price of 18 on December 31st. It's a gain of 2,465%. And they were struggling. They were struggling to sell video games, retail outlet. GameStop took a sudden dive, leading thousands of latecomers licking their wounds with heavy losses. And there you go. If you got something riding like that, gee, that kind of sounds a little bit like Bitcoin and some of these other cryptos. But anyway,
indeed.
Wild price action. Yeah. People get in late, and they're the losers. Committee has called these people to testify, various peoples from the financial industry. FINRA is called a self-regulator because it's controlled by the industry to guarantee light-touch regulation. One of FINRA's main objectives is to draw a dark curtain around all aspects of Wall Street's trading and wealth transfer mechanisms, just to keep the pitchforks of the 99% at bay. I don't know. You know, they all go through the routine, Dave. They all cry, woes. And we're going to stop it. You know, if they didn't make money on it, yeah, they're going to stop it to make sure it doesn't happen again. But if it was something that they made a lot of money on it themselves, you know, it's let's find somebody and move on. I'm sorry, but that's just the way that it's been done lately, Dave.
Well, and I think that's the point here, that, I mean, one of the right criticisms of FINRA is that it's controlled by the folks it's supposed to regulate. And, you know, the Depository Trust Company, the DTC, see, apparently considered the godfather of the crime families on Wall Street. You know, a number of insiders who believe that the DTCC is actively engaged in a kind of naked short selling conspiracy with the hedge funds and possibly the mega banks on Wall Street. And among its many factions, the DTC is supposed to ensure the proper exchange of securities between buyers and sellers and also function as a central securities depository by providing centralized custody of those securities. Now, well over 10 years ago now, the association that represents security regulators from the U.S., Canada, and Mexico filed an amicus brief in federal court against the DTCC for its role in market manipulations. I mean, like the New York Fed, the DTC is literally owned by the Wall Street banks through outright share ownership of its common stock. It's sort of like, huh? I mean, its board of directors include executives of the largest trading houses and dark pool operators like J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, Morgan Stanley, UBS. You know, keep on keeping on. And then there's the good old SEC, which unfortunately has increasingly started to look just like another cozy self-regulator. Yep. You know, prior to Gensler, Gary Gensler, its new chair, who initially had been bringing promise, at least among outsiders, its past two chairs have come straight from legally defending the biggest banks on Wall Street as outside counsel. And now Gensler, who was praised for his independence when he was nominated by Biden, suffered an embarrassing stumble less than 2 weeks into office. And just last week, a woman by the name of Alex Young, K.O., abruptly resigned her post as director of enforcement at the SEC after just 6 days in office. Now, she was Gensler's pick. He hired her as his crime-fighting boss. But she spent the last two decades at the law firm that major Wall Street banks repeatedly hired to fight their serial fraud charges. That includes J.P. Morgan Chase, the five-time felon. So Thursday's hearing is definitely going to be one that we're going to keep our eyes on. And if you're not doing anything, you know, I don't think you're going to want to miss it if you care about cleaning up this deeply conflicted, self-serving oligarchy on Wall Street. It's getting maddening out there, Melody.
Well, it is, but
it's hard to talk about it sometimes.
Yeah,
especially when if you have low expectations of in terms of any changes.
I have very low expectations of any changes. It's just they're going through the motions. They're going through the motions, and maybe they'll find some poor scapegoat to, you know, that they can point
to. Oh, man, that would be bad.
Yeah. I'm sure they have them in the crosshairs as of now, as we speak. But
yeah.
Anyway, sure, fingers crossed, but I'm not going to hold my breath. But it is interesting, and people should know about it. And it's, but they've tried to do it in prior administrations, and it just doesn't do anything, you know. But anyway, why don't you go ahead and you talk about this U.S. Trade Rep digital services tax hearings that's underway. That's kind of up your alley.
Well, you know, another hearing, it's actually a week-long series of hearings by the U.S. Trade Rep's office on digital services taxes. You know, the ones that are charged by six other countries in Europe, mainly, I believe, that's underway. It comes as groups, including internet giants Amazon and Facebook, are pressing for a global deal instead of, you know, costly new bout of tariffs. In March, you might recall, the U.S. announced plans to hit these nations with retaliatory tariffs that could cost almost $1 billion annually. Under the Trade Act, the process will continue with country-specific hearings for the UK, Italy, Spain, and Austria on Thursday, Turkey on Friday, and India next week. If the U.S. goes through with these tariffs, goods entering from the U.S. may range from Italian ties, Spanish shoes, to Turkish kilim rugs, and British beauty supplies. I didn't know there were British beauty supplies. I'm tempted to call an oxymoron, but I know some British people, and hopefully they're not listening to my wisecracks. But they could face duties of as much as 25% annually. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, has been trying to broker a global agreement for 6 years now on how to capture profits of companies with little or no physical presence in a market where they do business. And so it says it aims to do so by the middle of this year. But countries frustrated with the slow pace of negotiations, Melody, began to move forward on their own with these taxes on the revenues of the big tech firms 2 years ago.
Well, I'm just going to say this about British beauty supplies, Dave. You'd be surprised. You'd be
Did I overstep my bounds?
No, not at all. Not at all. But I also learned from, I believe she was from Hungary, that the European women begin using beauty supplies very young. And maybe we got a lot of that now, but she said they start doing facials and everything just as little girls, which I had no idea.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she said that, you know.
Like,
and she
talk in elementary school?
Just in their, you know, I don't, just young
early
girls.
Early teens,
maybe, yeah. You know, maybe even before that, heading into teens, 10, 11, 12, something like that. And I was quite surprised. So they work on it. They're getting better. They're getting better. But anyway.
Go for it. Whatever makes you feel good, I guess.
The Group of Seven Democracies, they're discussing a way of countering challenges with China and Russia today, and without trying to contain Beijing or escalate the tension with the Kremlin. Now, the G7, founded in 1975, it was a forum for the West's richest nations, and, you know, they got together to discuss the crises. We were talking about the OPEC oil embargo just yesterday, and the G7 is debating responses to the two increasingly assertive countries, you know, about various things. And it's the Secretary of State, Blinken, had said it's not our purpose to try to contain China or to hold China down. Well, maybe they should. You know, maybe they should. Maybe focus on us a little bit more. But he said the West would defend the international rules-based order. The international rules-based order from subversive attempts by any country, and that's including China. So, again,
that's
China
was
the
new old world order.
Yeah, yeah. Same old, same old. China was the focus of discussions this morning. Then the talks turned to Russia. And, of course, the turning to Russia was turning to Ukraine. And, of course, the imprisonment of the Kremlin critic Alexei Navalny. So China's economic and military rise over the past 40 years is seen by diplomats and investors as the most significant geopolitical event of recent times, alongside the 1991 fall of the Soviet Union. So, you know, the G7 still packs a pretty powerful punch. It has about $40 trillion in economic clout. And three of the world's five official nuclear powers. So,
not too chintzy. You know what I find fascinating about this is that the language that's being used seems to be couched in such caution these days in terms of. I mean, it's certainly a delicate balancing act to some degree, but especially with Russia. Now, I guess there's some concern about particularly wanting to salvage the life of Navalny and not wanting further. Incursion in Ukraine that is leading to this cautious diplomacy, I guess. China, maybe for similar reasons, with all the tiffs in the South China Sea and Hong Kong and Taiwan, the U.S. not wanting to, you know, seemingly force Xi's hand to invade Taiwan. But I mean, this the G7 in particular, and even a larger group, NATO, even with, you know, an insurgent like Turkey, they've got to show, I think, a more powerful, I guess, unanimity against aggression by those the other two countries, or they're going to end up seeing China and Russia do their dirty deeds anyway, and end up making us look pretty gosh darn weak in the process. You know, I know a lot of observers are saying, you know, don't worry about China invading Taiwan, and you know, that the thing in Hong Kong won't turn out to be as bad as we fear. Just the end of democracy there, and China wanting to be the world's economic dominant force less than 20 years. But geez, Melody, I mean, don't you think if we're teeter tottering on, well, we just don't want to cross the line here, it's going to end up happening anyway. And I just think there has to be, I don't think, I mean, I don't know about Navalny, but I don't think China is going to make the move into Taiwan, particularly. And I still think we've got a lot to win in ongoing trade negotiations with emphasis on second biggest economy in the world. Let's just not, quiver. I mean, what do you think?
Well, the problem is they always draw a line in the sand. And, you know, they've made promises. And you know, of course, we made promises before and never kept them. You know, and so, I mean, it's probably the same thing. You know, we'll support Taiwan and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, here's a line in the sand, and things get a little hairy. And I think as long as China is able to function and there are no major calamities, financial calamities, but once the system begins to break down, then you don't know what they might do. But what we're going to do is head into a break, so we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoices.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And it is Tuesday, May 4th, 2021. And we talk about this here and there and how technology is growing. And it's just a sign of me moving into the age group of 40, but there's news, you know, I'm getting old there, ladies and gentlemen. Kroger.
That's meant to be a very supportive laugh, by the way.
Yeah, well, I just ignored you. Kroger, I'm not sure if we talked about this last week. I think we did. You know, drone delivery technology. So now it's they're looking to where if you need something like in relatively 10, 15 minutes, you can have it. And the testing began this week in Centerville, Ohio. And these drone flights are going to be managed by licensed pilots with Kroger's partner, Drone Express. And customer deliveries are scheduled to begin later this week. And a second pilot is scheduled to launch this summer at a store in California where Kroger operates its Ralph subsidiary. So, you know, this comes as Kroger's, you know, hit their e-commerce sales hit $10 billion last year. And they began to ramp up their home delivery service, and they want to double that figure by the end of 2023. So they're real excited about it, and the pilot reinforces the importance of flexibility and the immediacy to customers powered by modern and efficient last-mile solutions, Dave.
Last-mile solutions, there you go. Well, it's got a current weight limit of just 5 pounds. So, of course, Kroger stressing marketing the service with the potential for providing last-minute or forgotten items, like sunscreen delivered to customers at the beach. Because the drones hone in on the customer's smartphone placing the order, it also offers the convenience of delivery away from your home. So customers could theoretically order mustard or mayonnaise they forgot at a picnic in a park. Beth Flippo of Drone Express's parent, Telegrid, said, the possibilities for customers are endless. We can enable Kroger customers to send chicken soup to a sick friend or get a fast delivery of olive oil if they run out while cooking dinner. Besides Kroger stores, the grocer operates several regional supermarket chains in 35 states. So listen to these. I mean, if you live in these areas, drone delivery service could be coming to you in the not-too-distant future. Fred Meyer, hey, Harris Teeter, Melody, Ralph's, Mariano's, Fry's, Smith's, King Supers, QFC, and others. 2,800 stores, 500,000 workers through its system. So the drone service could spread broadly and quickly if its trial run is successful. I wonder if the National Park Service will charge Kroger for flying into the beaches at places like Assateague National Park, Melody. What do you think?
Sure, it would sure save packing up all the stuff, right? Just say, oh, I need this, this. You wouldn't have to haul it to the beach and break your back doing it. But
I know. Gosh, you order flowers on the fly for your for your favorite partner as he or she is running away.
Well, you know, we talk a lot about inflation. And I know, yes, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about inflation once again. And this is the newsletter article. And
gag.
gag.
No, and I did talk a little bit yesterday about Doug Nolan's article that he had in there. And so we're going to talk about the only positive effect I see is on gold and silver. That's pretty much really the only positive impact that inflation will have. I mean, inflation destroys.
Yeah.
But it will be positive for gold and silver, Dave.
It destroys in ways we see and in others we don't, or at least don't immediately. Now, as listeners know, Melody and I don't generally like quoting Wall Streeters who move the markets in ways that tend to benefit themselves and their fellow billionaires, particularly at others' expense. But words matter. So on occasion, when their words move the precious metals market, well, we'll mention them. And big dog investor Warren Buffett, he's the latest player to weigh in on inflation, saying at last weekend's Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting that he and his team are seeing substantial inflation. Hey, welcome to reality, Warren. As recent studies indicate, concerns about inflation are spreading and growing louder among investors, businesses, and consumers alike. That's even as the Fed and many mainstream economists vow that price hikes will be temporary. Transitory is the word being bandied about. Inflation will be transitory, Melody, and shouldn't be a cause of worry. Buffett told his shareholders, people have money in their pocket and they pay higher prices. It's almost a buying frenzy. And we are raising prices. This is still Buffett. People are raising prices to us and it's being accepted. Now, as a quick aside, it's notable that Berkshire Hathaway bought back $6.6 billion in shares of its own stock last year after a record $27.4 billion in repurchases in the heat of the pandemic. All corporate stock buybacks are expected to swing back into high gear after increasing by over 28% in 2020's fourth quarter alone.
Yeah, that really is amazing. And no one ever touches on that when we talk about these high stock market prices. And you point to the Fed's monthly M2 money supply chart that shows the U.S. money stock reaching just shy of, what, $20 trillion in March? Now, that's up over one quarter, 29%, from $15.5 trillion as of March 1, 2020. So that's a whole lot more cash in the economy for such a short period of time.
Yeah, it sure is, Melody. And with investors looking for any piece of good news to keep the ball of irrational exuberance rolling, particularly in the paper markets, expectations are now sky high for this Friday's payroll report.
Some are
telling us, what's that?
That's right.
I'm sorry?
That's this Friday.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Yeah, and a lot of people have been saying, forget about money supply. It's irrelevant when it comes to inflation. Well, I mean, that may be convenient for them to suggest, but it's certainly one factor. And I think it happens to be an important one, particularly when that much more money is available in an economy over such a short period of time, as Melody mentioned. But just getting back to jobs for a second, some economists expected this jobs report could show adding jobs in April at a pace not seen since last year's record-setting spree in May and June. And while it probably won't hit last June's 4.8 million, some believe, we could see more than 2 million jobs added back, thus intensifying the momentum from March this year, when American employers added 916,000 jobs. And on top of that, last week's initial jobless claims report marked the third straight week that claims were below 600,000, their lowest since early April. So adding to the strong hiring trend on top of this, more companies are reportedly giving out pay increases. I mean, holy smackaroos, Batman. I mean, Amazon last week said that more than 500,000 of its employees would receive pay raises of between 50 cents and $3 an hour, while Walmart and Costco announced wide-ranging pay increases earlier in the year. Now, you know, 50 cents, $3 an hour may not be a ton of money, but it's going to be a good jump for those employees at the lower end of the pay scale. And more importantly, with hundreds of thousands of employees that these companies employ combined, that's, again, those pay raises are going to no doubt lead to other cries in other companies for higher pay to add back more jobs. That, in turn, is going to put increasing pressure on prices. Businesses are going to say, well, employees are getting paid more. I can afford to raise my price, pass along some of my price increases on to them. But again, here's my bottom line with jobs. On the other side of it, there are still 8.4 million fewer people employed in the U.S. as of March than there were in February 2020. So on the one hand, yes, inflationary pressures. On the other hand, those who think we're about ready to grow, you know, just grow our way up a Pike's Peak, I think are grasping for straws.
Well, you know, we have seen, you know, increased wages, but we'll see how it plays out, you know, because what I've always found is so many times this is just image building and, you know, nobody wants to work. I'm not going to say nobody wants to work, but many people have said they don't want to go back to work because they do get more off of the benefits. And that's a fact. I've talked to many, many, many employers and HR people and just like hear the same thing. So what happens when those folks decide to come into the industry? You know, you're going to have, you know, usually when you have these, especially Amazon, especially Walmart, and especially Costco, if they give raises and bonuses, they take it away someplace else. You know, they'll close departments or they'll rearrange and, you know, they'll, you know, close a store here and they'll close a store there and they make up for it somehow, some way, or higher prices. I mean, it is what it is. And 50 cents an hour and even a little more, you know, if oil prices continue to rise, that's not even going to cover the increased gasoline that the folks have to use. So, you know, to me, a lot of it is image building, but anything can help, you know, so we'll just see how it plays out.
Absolutely.
We'll have to see. And you said that this had a lot to do with gold and silver. You know, we did see that they were both up sharply yesterday, and they were up a good part of the day before they reversed. And we even had gold breach $1,800. So, you know, what say you, Dave?
Well, hey, thanks, Janet, for your words of wisdom. The momentum in both gold and silver today. But just know it's very temporary. I mean, the fundamentals showed in the last weeks, especially among this bargain hunting. But there's so many bullish forces that are going to continue to drive up gold and silver. A weaker U.S. dollar, these firmer crude oil prices, a dip in U.S. government bond yields, and yes, these rising concerns about inflation. The gold and silver bulls quickly regained the overall near-term technical advantage through yesterday, and we can see that over the last 9 weeks, these uptrends on the daily charts with gold and silver prices. They got to within $2 of $1,800 yesterday morning. And again, broke through that barrier earlier today before Madam Janet had her say about inflation, interest rates, and the economy. Chris Weston of the firm Pepperstone believes the risk of this April jobs report on Friday is for a hotter number, but he asks, will good numbers lead to a broad risk-off vibe? as traders price in higher rate expectations and the dollar then rallies? Or will good numbers lead to positivity based on a strong economy? And he continues, I suspect we're getting to a point where really good data could start to become bad for markets. And I think he's talking in terms of the inflationary impact. And if that's the case, a lot of analysts say gold and silver, gold in particular, will see higher prices in response to the fresh data. Now, Weston wonders whether inflation will indeed prove to be as intransitory as the Fed and others believe. Although, let's admit, it's not a question we're going to learn anytime soon, even if the markets tend to think 12 to 18 months ahead. I thought that they couldn't see much past their noses, Melody. I think the major translation here is to look for continued uncertainty and volatility for investors for some time to come.
Absolutely, and our time has come that we're just about out of the program at the end of the show. And I just wanted to make a comment here that in the last full week of April, you have money managers increase their speculative gross long positions by 301 contracts. So, again, everybody knows how this is playing out and they're positioning themselves. Make sure you do, too. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. We'll be back tomorrow. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless. Thank you, Dave.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
I got you.